Start recording. Good morning and happy almost Advent season. Today is November 30th, 2017. I'm Jay Leesk, and for reasons I don't fully understand, but am ever grateful for, you're listening to the On The Spot News Brief.
The Speed of Technology podcast, and I'm Craig Jenke here with Jay. Jay, what are we going to talk about this week?
So much. Actually, Craig, you've been doing a really good job pulling together news articles, and for those of you who are following us on Facebook, we've been posting them out as often as Craig's been pulling them in. So if you've been following it, you know we're going to talk about Dell, we're going to talk about AI, we're going to talk about apples, and so on and so forth.
And oranges? Are we going to get oranges? Or different type of apple?
No, you haven't found any good articles about oranges, Craig. I'm sorry. So let's get right into it. Let's talk about Dell. So if you have been following Microsoft and Office 365 and all the cool functionality they've been bringing out, you may remember that in the last few years, Satya Nadella got up on stage and said, we're going to create smart apps that are going to help you be more productive. It's going to bring content to you. And he showcased a tool called Delve. Have you used Delve?
I've used Delve. It's pretty cool. I mean, it pulls in all the stuff that you're doing on your collaboration system, and it's a nice little search capabilities. So I like it. I like it a lot. I saw the article where it says Microsoft kills Windows 10 app Delve, which, you know, had like a teaser on it that, ooh, this was Nadia's big thing.
And, Nadia's.
Yeah.
Which? Sorry, Satya, your new name is just Nadia.
Nadia Comaneci. I also saw the article where she did something, but I don't know what that was because I knew that one specifically was clickbait.
Back on track.
Sorry. But yeah, I felt the article was a little bit of clickbaitish because it really isn't getting rid of Delve. They're just getting rid of the app Delve. And, you know, they're more moving the functionality right into the search bar on Windows 10. So you'll still have the functionality. You'll be able to search for stuff. You'll be able to pull information in. It's just that there's no longer going to be an app specifically that you need to click on. So to me, it actually sounds better.
Yeah, I think it's better for them in a lot of ways. One, no one was ever going to go to a search app like Delve to see what their teams are working on. So to be able to showcase what it can do, that's great. To be able to take that and make it production capable, that's awesome. But really to be able to push that back into your standard searched bar, to be able to push that back into the what are you working on stuff, the things you're already in. I'm looking forward to seeing Delve pushed into things like Word. When you go to open a new document, it shows you the last 10 documents you worked on. I'm looking forward to Delve saying, do you want to work on this? Because this is what your team is working on. That kind of capability, I think, is going to be really big. And that's where the productivity is going to kick in. Where it is right now in that app, I've literally opened Delve twice and went, yeah, this is a cool function, but I'm never going to go onto it on its own.
Yeah, that's pretty much how I feel. Especially what it works nicely is if you want to see like the mapping of your organization. So, you know, who reports to who, it works out nice for that. Because that's one of the standard out of the box things. But I agree. It's nice that it seems to be more part of the actual operation, as you said. So I'm excited about that too.
So let's continue talking about Microsoft Azure. Microsoft Azure, coming from CNBC.com, they're talking about how Azure is growing faster than AWS, and it's because of the big brands. I mean, I will say in sales, you get your quota because you hit the big whales. So to hear that it's because of the big brands isn't a big surprise to me, but it's true. If you've been to a Microsoft conference in the last, I don't know, 3-4 years, all you're hearing is the giant case studies that are behind Microsoft Cloud, Office 365, and Azure.
So what I like about Azure is it plays nicely with Office 365, and there's a lot of information protection services that goes into Azure, like Azure Information Protection Services allows you to share information securely. It also has capabilities to scan your cloud and your computers to make sure that people are using company-provided software and not using rogue IT and exchanging, you know, doing sharing data where they're not supposed to be and things like that. So I think that's where it's getting some adoption, and then customers are slowly growing out that their capabilities and using things like machine learning and just, you know, moving virtual machines there because it's cheaper to use somebody else's software than it is to maintain your own, especially with the rate of how things are evolving so quickly. You don't have to keep up with the patches and those kind of things. So,
yeah, I'll add to that. I think Microsoft has three things really going for it right now. One, the sales team is specifically, they've changed how the sales team is getting paid. You're no longer getting paid because you signed a $1 billion potential deal. You're getting paid because out of that $1 billion potential, the company is using $2 million. Now that's not a really great a great example, but the point is they're getting paid on consumption rather than potential. And the fact that they're getting paid on consumption means that the sales team is really trying to make sure people are buying what they're going to use and that they're trying to show them good use cases. And I'll be honest, we're getting the benefit of a lot of that because Microsoft's putting out a lot of funding to get companies to actually use the tools. I think number two, Microsoft does have some really cool applications that they've pulled together. Delve was a good example of how to find out what's happening in your stuff. The cognitive services, man, the things that are coming out with that, the ability to scan pictures and find out what's in it, to listen to audio and find out who's talking. There's some really cool services that are happening there. Now, obviously, those aren't affecting every user or every customer, but the fact that Microsoft is pushing the grounds there is huge. The third thing I think is there are a lot of companies who aren't willing to commit. This article is a good example where the article is about a company called Sapient Consulting, which is a division of Publicis Group. And Publicis has flat out said, we are not a single cloud provider. We are not interested in a single cloud provider.
I've seen that a lot.
Yep. And so what we're seeing a lot of is, yeah, people have a lot on Amazon or a lot in Google Cloud, but they're not willing to commit. So they're starting to spread what they're doing in different vendors just in case they need to make a jump somewhere. So I think Microsoft is getting some benefit from that as well.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of that. A lot of customers I talk to don't want to be pigeonholed into one technology or the other. So, and it works good for us because we're, you know, we help clients get into both. So, with migration, at least that's what we should be doing. So,
so speaking of the other side, let's talk about Amazon for a minute. Another great article you pulled out was that Amazon unveiled an AI consulting program for cloud customers.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool. So they realize that AI and machine learning are becoming huge in the business space, and every customer wants to get into it. You see a lot of it as when CIO articles come out, it's one of the top five things that CIOs are concerned about is how do we, look at big data, how do we make use of it? So Amazon realizes that there's not a lot of expertise out there, and it requires a lot of work to set up machines for machine learning and try to process this stuff. So they're basically starting a consulting arm that helps customers launch those kind of machine and environments and get those into production. One of the big benefits about it, is obviously, again, there's a lack of resources to do it, so they're taking it over. I haven't seen a price on any of that, so it'll be interesting to see how that comes about.
Yeah, the pricing is going to be the big question. I mean, consulting is not cheap, and Amazon's saying this is going to be a 3 to 6 month engagement at a minimum. So when you're starting to talk about that, well, maybe you could go hire your own people. Who knows? But it's a very interesting step. It makes a lot of sense. I mean, Microsoft has their consulting services. Amazon has consulting services. So to see them step in this direction, I think it's a good idea. And it'll be interesting to see what companies take advantage of it and how. The next step I want to take is since we're talking about cloud and so much of the Internet of Things is attached to the cloud. There's an article here about childproofing the Internet of Things. This is a one-year project funded by the Engineering and Physical Sciences Research Council in conjunction with a number of other organizations, including the NSPCC, the Family Online Safety Institute, and an organization called MicroBit, their educational foundation, and of course, researchers from a university, in this case, the University of Lancaster. they're basically just realizing that, hey, you know, if we're going to have internet enabled refrigerators and crock pots and that device that sits on your counter that listens to everything you say, how do we ensure that children are safe around these things?
Yeah, and I know that's an issue that's important to both of us because we have, you know, we both have young daughters and they're not so much using the internet, but the internet of things that, you know, if they're all around, my wife gets freaked out because we have, you know, we have Alexis, and she listens to everything you say. So my wife, you know, worries that the daughters will ask it the wrong question, get the wrong thing, or that somebody will overhear it or it could get hacked. And, you know, there's a lot more devices like the security systems that have cameras on them and things like that. So that could just get kind of a bad thing if you get people hacking into it and, you know, everyone wants to protect their children. And you always see articles out there of things going wrong.
Yeah. That's the one that's close to our heart right now. We have a baby on the way. And when we had my daughter 5 years ago, I tried to convince my wife to get an internet camera as the baby monitor. And she was not a fan, but I think this time around they're so much more normalized. I might be able to get her to do it, but you're right. How do we ensure that it's not being looked at by some bad-natured person and who knows where? My neighbor? No, I'm just kidding. but you know what I mean? It's you got to keep your kids safe, and we've kind of accepted the normalization of everything's internet-enabled, but really, how do we ensure safety? That's a big one. Yeah. There.
So it's great that somebody's actually looking at it, and you know, hopefully more than just this one group. And you know, as consumers, we need to be aware of what's going on, and things like that. So,
and I would go one step further. As organizations developing these things, we need to be thinking about how are we keeping our children safe. You know, Alfpoint, where we work, doesn't really get into that because we're more B2B type stuff. But if you are developing consumer electronics, consumer toys, consumer applications, what are you doing as an organization to make sure that your users are safe in what they're doing? So that's a big thing that organizations need to be thinking about.
Yeah, that's a great point.
And speaking of consumers being safe, I like how this is all tied together very well today. This past week, a major Apple vulnerability was announced. Being a non-Apple person for as long as I have been a non-Apple person, it just makes me giggle.
The issue they're running into is people can log on to any Mac that's running the latest operating system, which seems scary.
Yeah, with the root user, not just like with a random guest account, but with the highest admin of all admins on the laptop.
And why would that be scary, Jay?
I can't think of any reason. No, actually, in all seriousness, my wife this morning, we were talking about it, and she said, "Do I have to worry about this?" I'm like, "Look, I don't know enough about Apple's Macs to be able to comment very well, but I don't think your public school system has upgraded your laptop to the latest operating system, but you should call to find out. Because, you know, yeah, you lock your computer every time you leave the room, but if one of your students walks over, types root in the username, nothing in the password, and hits enter, oh, look, they have access to your gradebook. Oh, look, they have access to your tests. Like, it's just crazy.
So you need to take your computer with you and keep it on you at all times.
Yeah. Now, of course, Apple has responded and said we're working on a patch, and they've sent out instructions that say this is how you log in and change the password for it. This is scary. The fact that somebody did something that they left a blank password in an enabled account that had no business being default enabled. It was just crazy.
Yeah, I don't know how that happens, and good on the person that found it out. But, you know, I'm sure it was an accident, but as soon as they found it out, put it on the web, and then bam, everybody knows. So,
yeah. All right, well, following last week, I don't think we could have a podcast that doesn't talk about net neutrality. There is an article going around. Again, this is take it or leave it. I just want to be able to present information that hits both sides, right? There's an article going around that kind of takes a lot of the arguments that have been going on around the importance of net neutrality and talking about why it's not as big a deal as what people have been saying.
Yeah, so he kind of, the author of this article kind of looks at, you know, the Portugal thing, which we had talked about a while ago, and says that, you know, some of it is taken out of context and you need to look at it points out that there's no evidence of widespread mismanagement of the internet by ISPs. So, you know, there have been one or two cases where ISPs have done things that are questionable, but they've been quickly called on it and changed their behavior. But they're motivated to get the maximum number of users. And I think it's kind of what we were talking about, you know, let capitalism do its work and let the market kind of regulate it so that the users can get what they want.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, we still have a lot of unknowns. I'm not as sure it's as easy as what this gentleman is saying. I question whether or not you can trust a big corporation to be honest and take care of its people. Yes, they are judged by not judged, but they are most successful when they get the most, I wouldn't say users, but the most money. So if they can get the most users that pay the most money, that's a good combination for them. I don't know. I thought this was important to share, but I'm not convinced by the article.
Yeah. So, you know, and along that lines is we had talked on the last podcast that how Comcast basically said, you can trust us, and put out a big statement saying, you know, we will be net neutral, even if we don't have to be. And then the FCC kind of came out with their stance on net neutrality, and statement seemed to disappear from Comcast's website. So it could be a coincidence. Maybe they're just walking back how net neutral they're going to be. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
There's a lot to come on this topic. There's a lot to come from the government as to what they do and do not change. There's a lot to come from the ISPs who may or may not choose to take advantage of such changes. And there's a lot to come from the people who are going to very loudly say whether or not they approve of these changes. And
it's not anything that's going to happen overnight and take down the entire web, like I think some people fear. But what I will say is, when you said, like, on any podcast, if you've listened, I thought you were going to roll right into a dinosaur fact and you were going to skip that article.
Well, it's funny. I'm actually prepared with such things today. And so to close out this episode of On the Spot News Briefs, let me give you a little bit of dinosaur knowledge. Are you aware of where the word dinosaur actually comes from?
Big lizard.
Yeah, close. So close. Terrible lizard. It's Greek for terrible lizard. The word was coined by English paleontologist Richard Owen in 1842, and it referred to terrible as big, so that's a good point, rather than scary, which is a fun play on the fact that English words mean so many different things.
I don't know if I'm supposed to be answering those, but I love dinosaur facts. I probably could have been, if things would have worked out and I thought there were money in it, I could have been like Ross Geller and been a paleontologist or whatever a dinosaur
paleoantologist
is.
Paleoantologist, dear lord.
That did not come out
and
right.
And this is why you will never be a paleontologist.
Yes, that is why. Was that or like history and architecture? I didn't really see myself as a history teacher, but that's where I really like stuff. So I like history and that kind of stuff. So I know that.
Well, Craig, every week I find myself thinking whatever universal medium you may believe in to have pushed you into podcasting so I can have such a well-spoken and clearly voiced
co-host. Yeah, I'm going to work on that too. So. Hopefully I'm getting better.
All right. Well, we're pushing 20 minutes. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode.
All right. Good morning. And in case I don't see you, good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
This episode brought to you by Jay Least and Craig Denke, two guys who like to talk technology and live in a connected world. The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the speakers only, and in no way do they represent the opinions of their employers, their customers, or their wives. This has been an On the Spot podcast production.